Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Your top off-season PED myths. And there's a ton that we could go into. And I think there's a lot of things, though, that still have just been present and old dogma that's been around, and there's a lot of approaches that we have learned to just be changed a bit. So Luke and I today, we're going to just cover what we really see out in the world that are still people hanging on to some of this myths, and can we debunk them today?
Yeah, I think it's really good to start to kind of line out potentially also some of the logic too as to why, you know, we kind of see this as like, you know, maybe I could see where some people are coming from an anecdote standpoint and saying some of these, but they're not directly correlating with why we actually use these drugs, right? And so we want to kind of just dive in. And I think the first topic to cover would be like massing steroids versus cutting steroids, and knowing that these drugs kind of get grouped into either prep compounds or off-season compounds, and maybe why potentially some of that is fairly false.
I remember when I was reading first into steroids and on different forum boards, and there was like steroid.com, and it made it seem like there were like bucket list ones for off season or prep, and potentially all the ones that dry, like your wet compounds that you would hear them say would be more ones to run in the off season for one, just if it caused more water retention, it's not something you'd want on contest prep. It also would give just some disillusion in your off-season phase that you're gaining more mass because you were seeing more scale weight change. So a lot of times it was like this, the test deca D-ball cycle, which just turns you into the marshmallow man, and you're up like 30 pounds and your lower back is pumping, and you can barely train because you're so pumped. But also you just look like you don't even know if you're gaining fat, water, or muscle at this point. So we have like that cycle. But then if you moved into contest prep, it's going to be something like, you know, your lower dosing of test, but more anabolics like Masteron and Trenbolone and Winstrol. But you wouldn't use those in off season because these other drugs cause more fat loss to occur, a harder look. So I think a lot of these are, if you scope back, like, yeah, they do, one increases weight more than another. But we have to say, what about actual skeletal muscle, contractile tissue? And does that extra water mean anything, or is it limiting?
Yeah, and I think that understanding that the action for all of these drugs is going to be androgen receptor, right? And we've brought this up multiple times in previous podcasts that when we look at like skeletal muscle tissue accrual across these drugs being extremely similar from an ability to elicit a response at the androgen receptor, it's going to start to disassociate like drugs being contest prep or off-season drugs. And we're going to just start to look at, you know, this being the androgen receptor pathway and what drugs are we going to use to influence that androgen receptor, potentially taking into consideration the ones that do have a little bit more of a fluid retention response, not being utilized in prep from an accuracy of assessment standpoint, but strictly not directly kind of associating one with all season or one with prep. And I think we can kind of dive into, I think Masteron's probably the big one. I think Masteron's the big one that we get a lot of, flack on and really resistance, especially in an all season. And you could probably lump Primo into that too. But I think that this is like a big topic of debate that I still see with clients coming in that has to be discussed.
Yeah, and before touching on that part, I think one thing to know, if you are looking at these other drugs for mass, like what's going to build the most tissue, like Luke's saying, like, hey, relatively, again, key word is relatively, they're going to build muscle close to the same. Now, this is contractile tissue, not water. So it doesn't mean, oh, I ran that Decacycle and then I lost 10 pounds coming off. Well, that's not actual contractile tissue. So yes, one might make you gain more weight, but you do have to keep in mind that, you know, they would differentiate to a degree in individual responses, right? Some people just get along better with another compound and maybe see a more robust effect, and you should explore that for yourself. But with that being said, the ones that gain the most water, they might be limiting too. So things that need to happen in the off season for you to grow is your ability to sleep, eat, and train. So if you're, and also just assess yourself. So if you're at a point where you can't actually see if it is fat versus water that or you're gaining, that's a point where you could easily get too fat in the off season. But also you have to worry about health markers, right? If you're holding so much water, your blood pressure is sky high, this is going to lead to probably a decline in work capacity in the gym, not being able to train with enough stamina and have quality stimulus. Even that, with health marker decline, you might have to cut the cycle short because your health is just in the trash. Then also sleep, blood pressure's up, anxiety gets higher, and then just causing more excess body weight holding. Probably one of the greatest health detriments you can happen. Maybe your sleep apnea is flaring up more now and you get poor sleep. Poor sleep means poor recovery. It means poor training. So now you're not growing as well either. So you have to consider these things before you just look at what puts the most weight on you. And that's why we have seen more of this shift in a lot of people using more compounds that don't cause such a water increase, like Primobolan or Masteron, or some people still use like boldenone, you know, as their secondary anabolic along with testosterone. And so back to this point of the second one is Masteron is only for aesthetics only, that it doesn't build muscle.
Yeah.
And does it build muscle, Luke? Does it do this?
No, it absolutely does. And I think when you talk about relatively and just to kind of set a basis of conversation, we should assume that test is always the base. It's ran at close to maximal relative to what that person can handle from an estrogen perspective to gain some of the benefits of slight estradiol elevation. And then the compounds that we use from there are to make up the total milligrams that the client needs in order to accrue more tissue, with consideration to minimizing the negative effects that could potentially shorten an off season that John had cited. So does that mean that, you know, a drug like nandrolone that is going to have some like water retentive properties is completely off the table? No, it doesn't mean that in an off season setting. It just means the amount that we use may be relatively less to the classic test DECA D-ball cycle, and we might use it for some subjective benefits that we see from like a joint perspective for some athletes, but we can just make up the total milligram amount with compounds that are going to influence the androgen receptor, build tissue relatively at the same rate, allow us to maximize the test dose that we have for the client, and mitigate the potential for cutting an off season short. And that is the primary reason I typically see this as like, I don't even know if I want to call it a gold standard, because to me, test is the gold standard, but a really close second place to being able to pull the most out of an athlete. Because at the end of the day, the longer you can keep someone productive in an off season, the more tissue they're going to build.
With that being said, like staying in the off season, being productive, a lot of this comes down to compound choice based on staying healthy. Mm. And so if we said these compounds relatively might build about the same amount of tissue, they definitely differentiate in side effect profiles where we see how they've been applied clinically, some for anemia, right? So you might have some that drive up red blood cell count, or you might have a compound for one individual that really skews their hematocrit levels, or for someone else, or maybe it really skews their lipids, or maybe they notice more acne or hair issues that occur with a certain compound. And that's where you start differentiating, like, all right, well, this compound really did this side effect wise for me. I'm going to go with this other compound. And so there's a few that you have to select from to be able to build out that total milligram amount. And what they do differentiate on too is their androgenic profile. So this is the masculinizing effects that they have, and that is offsite from the anabolic muscle building effects. And so we see like some compounds are very much more androgenic because a lot of these were tested in females, which say, for instance, Primobolan and versus Masteron. This is like the common comparison that you see. Primobolan on paper and even anecdotally seems to be pretty benign. It almost could be, maybe it's nearly the perfect anabolic, it being such low androgenic aspect to it, purely muscle building. You're not going to get the large water retention you would with primobolan. However, some people can't tolerate a lot of shot volume for primobolan. Some people can't access quality primobolan. So maybe that's a reason why you won't be using it. You might need to fill the gap with something else. But I think if you had like a test primo cycle base, that would be an excellent combination. However, Masteron, it's so similar in structure to primobolan. They also have alterations around where normally you'd have DHT be converted to a very weak androgen in skeletal muscle, which is why DHT doesn't build a lot of muscle. Both Masteron, Primobolan, Anavar have alterations to the ring structure to prevent this from happening, so they stay anabolic. Do they differentiate some? Yeah, potentially some. Is it vast? Anecdotally, we haven't seen that to be true. And we have clients and even personally run these compounds together and very well could build muscle. And that kind of lies where you have your choices of you're trying to pair with testosterone, the most benign drug to your health, and see out your muscle building effects. So is Masteron for aesthetics only? No, it's not.
Not at all. And I think you can anecdotally attest to this with it being pretty much probably the most productive all season you've ever ran right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I have quite a bit of Masteron in place, and we haven't even talked about this. I actually came across some quality primobolan that I can tolerate. And so I'm putting some of that into place and I'm raising my testosterone up just a little bit because my estradiol level was in a very good range and fine tolerating. So I almost think I might be fully saturating aromatase at this point, how my body works. And so I could probably tolerate a bit more testosterone and bring in some primobolan in place, because if I have the chance to use a more benign drug, I absolutely will. And that's primobolan. So yeah, there'll be a, so my last weeks of this, Luke, will be test primo Masteron combination.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's interesting because you even cited, like we were talking about this while we were in Phoenix, like from a lab work perspective, it's probably been the best your health work has managed throughout an all season phase as well, which is not going to cut you short in any way, shape or form other than the fact that you have a timeline to fit for competing this year. But like, if you wanted to extend this out, you could extend this out much further than like a general average all season phase, which is just going to keep you productive as long as body comp doesn't get too far off.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible because for the amount of Masteron I had, my lab markers, they all improved, which growing and my lab markers are improving. So I am curious to see how they change with this alteration and with primobolan coming in, if that actually would make more impact. Like some people say your lipids get more skewed with using primobolan. Like I don't have much impact around that factor, like with anything that I've run. So we'll see. Primobolan's been used around anemia as well. So we'll see if it drives up my hematocrit, because my hematocrit actually went down with using this cycle, but testosterone was way up. So, I mean, if anything, I should be just kind of topping out of what you would see with hematocrit rise as well. So we'll see. I'll have some weeks left. We'll see what the impact is with it. But, you know, going back to our point here is that bring up testosterone and fill in the rest of the gap with what's best for benign in health, and also going to fill in that total milligram out to grow.
Yeah, I think that... go ahead.
No, I was going to say the same thing as you. I think that might fully cover it.
Yeah.
I typed, as we're speaking, you gave me an idea around another myth that's been present. It's because our last ones aren't really necessarily steroid focused, but
they aren't.
I think this one should be there because I just saw someone speak to this this week on oral steroids to bust plateaus in the off season.
Oh my god!
I don't know if some people still front load with an oral. I don't know. I've never seen. I feel like that might be gone. But when we were talking about, you know, having longer off seasons and muscle growth, we want to differentiate for sure between muscle growth and just strength increase. And also just saying, just because you're increasing, getting stronger, doesn't mean you're actually seeing contractile muscle increase. Because building muscle, it's a very slow process. So it's not something that we're just trying to see, hey, let's get the most out of this next week. We need to sustain this for a good period of time to see that occur. And that's why for the bodybuilding purposes, like injectables are great, because they can work over a long-term aspect, and they're not as deleterious to your health as using like an oral steroid and skewing your lipid markers or throwing off appetite. And remember, if you can't eat, you can't grow. So a lot of people start seeing strength gains decrease. But I don't think it's because muscle gain is slowing down. It is a little bit, but more so you're probably off the acute rise of androgen. You've already seen out some of the neuromuscular changes that drive some of that. Then also you're just in your off season, and now you're getting to a point where lifts are going to slow down because some of the novelty around maybe this new training block you're in has moved a little slower. That doesn't mean you now need an oral steroid to drive more progress. It just means you have to just keep you doing the same thing. And you don't use an oral to bust a plateau, because at the end of this phase, you need to think about the next one, right? And what happens, Luke, when you throw in your oral, the end of your push phase, what are you going to look like at the end? How much longer is that next phase going to have to be because of that? Thanks everyone for tuning in to today's podcast. Are you struggling to hit your peak on show day? Feeling lost in the off season? Upgrade your coaching game with J3 University. Our program covers everything from off season to contest prep to peak week, all based from real client results. Along with our comprehensive physique curriculum, you'll also get access to our forums with our J3U team to answer any questions you have, and live Q&A sessions to further your coaching and athlete experience. We are the source of education for top IFBB pros and coaches. Join us to elevate the coaching standard at J3 University. Let's get back to today's podcast.
That health phase is going to be significantly longer and push you back from being able to start that next growth phase or prep, depending on the client. But there's going to have to be a longer transition to kind of pull back on the deleterious effects of potential oral steroid use. And we talk about like health being a primary thing that, one, either allows you to string along an off season further, or two, allows you to get back into off season quicker. It's like, even if, let's say, you know, body composition gets to a point where you can't push anymore, but health markers are in a great spot, you're literally just waiting to pull back body fat enough to the point where you can start again. You're not waiting for this health metric to improve and plugging in these orals on the back end of all season to try to bolster the back end of the all season push for that last little bit. It's like you're not probably even gaining a difference from a tissue accrual standpoint. In fact, I would potentially argue setting yourself up for less total, because you're going to have to spend more time in the health transition phase and less at a super physiological androgen dose by extending out the time until you can start that next phase.
And the psychological sucks on it, right? Like,
yeah, oh my God.
There's a quick emotional like rush and fun of throwing in some Anadrol at the end of your blast phase, but then you're left with a even larger decline in androgen, water retention dropping, all that fullness and roundness. Your disillusioned to thinking you had all these gains turned out to be, they were not. And so now you're left with less androgen, driving all these dopamine response, and it makes you feel sad and small to a greater degree than if you didn't have the oral in. So that's why I think that save the orals for prep, of when they really have their best application for something fast acting to retain tissue, versus just your emotional drive to want to bust through the logbook and smash it to death. So don't use orals, save them for prep. Next myth that I think we should touch, since it's related to, yeah, we brought up testosterone, would be the over suppression of estradiol. And I feel like a lot of people kind of anecdotally got this for a while, because if you looked, it's not terribly wrong when they're saying, like, hey, your mass drugs, you'd have like DECA in there or even testosterone, right? And or D-ball, like, why all those? Well, they directly increase water, but also most of them have some type of influence on estrogen. And driving up estradiol has lots of benefits for growth. And we see when you are overly suppressing estradiol with and using a testosterone cycle, that you have less lower IGF-1 levels and growth hormone release. Also, growth testosterone has impacts around with the rise of estradiol for all kinds of protective aspects in the body. It's neuroprotective, cardioprotective, protective of the kidney function. We see more neurotoxicity, brain toxicity when you decline estradiol. See more poor lipid skewing when you decrease it, more kidney stress. So it's something you definitely want present for the health aspects as well. Mm-hmm. Also, it has increases in glucose 6-phosphatase, which helps with improving glycogen storage. Mm-hmm. Increases nitric oxide, which helps with vasodilatory properties as well. And estradiol has links around even type 2 muscle force productivity, so mm-hmm. increasing force output. So lots of positive aspects around estradiol that should be there while you want testosterone as a base. And I see in a lot of cycles, and these are like current cycles put out by some coaches, where you have X amount of testosterone given, and it already comes in place with an aromatase inhibitor and a SERM together. Have you seen these cycles?
Absolutely. It came across my desk like 2 weeks ago. It's just like, yeah. It's just like asinine to think that the initial deployment, probably based off some client that they had that used this specific cycle and then is now basically copy and paste it into some variation for each other client. It's kind of built off the back of not even understanding what the client can tolerate from a test perspective and just basically assuming that crashing it is the answer so that they don't have to run into side effect management, which I understand lowering the risk of like potential gyno production, but you're missing out on the potential for one, health moderation throughout the entirety of the escalation. I'm probably going to cut the all season phase short because of that. And then two, really pulling the most out of the actual all season phase from the benefits that estradiol are going to provide. And so when I look at like estrogen influence, the only way that I use it is acutely to manage an issue that arises with a stack design change that puts them back into a place where they can tolerate that test dose without the need of AI or SERM in play. So there is certainly use for them. I don't want to put it in this like terrible trash bin over here and just say you should never even have these on hand. It's like, yeah, sure. We need some estradiol tools to mediate estradiol in certain situations where we get flare-ups, but it's not going to be a staple throughout the entirety of the stack design.
Yeah, especially the SERM is like a double-edged sword for GH-IGF-1.
Yeah.
Because your estrogen is... it's an input that you need for growth hormone release mm-hmm. from the hypothalamus pituitary axis. So then also in the liver, taking something like a synthetic estradiol or a SERM decreases IGF-1 expression. So if you're not taking growth hormone, you're going to lower your overall total growth hormone IGF-1. If you are taking growth hormone, well, you don't really need to worry about its secretion, but you're absolutely worried about this GH-IGF-1 conversion in the liver. Well, a SERM like Novodex would decrease this to a degree. So that's where it would be more detrimental. So this is, if you were to choose and needed, like, now gyno is a separate issue where you would acutely need a SERM that's has the best efficacy, and actually DHT derivatives have some of the best efficacy as well. Another topic for another day, but it's particularly where an aromatase inhibitor might have a little bit better aspect because you wouldn't be influencing directly that liver. Now the real issue here though is that there is an estrogen sweet spot to really work within. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still a wrong statement too, because this is another one to let estrogen go as high as humanly possible. And I think when we say like bring up testosterone as high as you're able to tolerate the estradiol component. And I think those are key words within that, because what is tolerate, right? Well, there shouldn't be uh-huh. gyno. There should be a manageable amount of water retention, because you can't just take an ARB and manage your water retention. It is more complex than that. also, what does sleep look like? What does libido look like? Where do you just have your best overall well-being feeling? And for, you know, a lot of guys, that might be less than 100 picogram per mil of estradiol, especially with when your androgens are sky high. So now we do have other people that are trying to give exact numbers, which is problematic because you're not taking into the other part of the equation, which is androgens. So it's all about the correct ratio of these things. I know some people are out there are going to have very high sensitivities to estradiol, or might have increased amounts of aromatase they express. So in some cases, you know, they might need some type of estrogen modulation, and or they might be limited in their compound choice. We had a guy in the forum, Luke, he was bringing up that he basically only had access to like testosterone and boldenone in his country. And he wants to bodybuild. So what are you going to tell him? Like, well, don't use aromatase inhibitor and don't use boldenone. Too bad. It's like, well, no, man, like bodybuild. Like it's, we're going to work within what we can do here and what's affordable within your country and what's accessible. So there's many routes to go. But I think what the big thing here is that we don't make assumptions on what we're giving clients across the board. So a lot of times it's, here's your gram of testosterone. Here's your AI and your serum. Be on your way. It's like, well, that shouldn't be so cookie cutter for everybody. Like some people might not need the AI and serum and could run a gram test. Some other guys could only do 200 milligrams. But we need to fill in the rest of with primobolan or something, but that should be exploratory. We're first working with a new client. Oh. We figure that out. We personalize their stack design. Then from there, we know what's going to work best for them. But what I see from the other coaches is that it's just XYZ plan just given out to everybody and it works, but it's also lacking the long-term result in health management because they're not having much assessment really happen on the front end.
Yeah. They're basically just, and excuse my French, well, I'm not going to cuss, covering their butt when in regards to like, just, hey, you know, let's make sure gyno doesn't happen here. Take both of these and then we'll just take all the drugs. Right. And so, it's very short-sighted, which I think, if you want to become one of the best coaches in the industry, one of your best tools is to coach clients for a long time, because with retention and keeping the long-term outcome in play, you're just going to elevate the status at which that client is able to compete. And then eventually they're going to be at the top of their, you know, potential. If we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which all kind of comes back to managing the acute phases and deploying PEDs that allow for maximization of results alongside management of those health metrics.
And you know, I know you mentioned it, like, you know, covers their butt, but not always to a degree, because it almost shoots them in the foot too, because now instead of just having worked your way up across some weeks to figure out what is the best for the client, you might be 6-7 weeks down the road and then hell breaks loose. You're like, what the hell is, what is what, right? They had so much test in place. There, a lot of times I'll see Deca or Nandrolone in place. Maybe they have Masteron, they have an AI, they have a SERM. And this 7 weeks later, they're like, man, my libido's shot. You know, I can't get an erection. Like, what's going on? And like, well, is it estrogen? Is it low? Is it high? Is it prolactin? Is that high? Let me go get lab work done. And now you have 5 different compounds in place where you're trying to toggle between to figure out and solve an issue that you could have avoided in the beginning by using a little bit more of the coaching approach to steroid design over the copy and paste design. So yeah, I think we've come a long way, and some of these myths that we covered today are ones to put to rest, but there's a lot of context to understand within them. So, and there's a gray area that we operate within. So it always isn't just yes and no. And there's even with myths, like there's maybe pieces of truth to them, but they've just been applied the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Hey, your mass drugs like Deca, yeah, that does make you weigh more and look bigger, take up more space, but is it just a lot of water? Okay. So it's like, there's some truth there, but also how do you apply it with having some context for what we really want? So when you're thinking through these myths, like try to challenge yourself and go deeper, think about all the context that needs to take place. And also if you need some quality coaching, check us out. We now have J3U coaching available. We hired some excellent coaches that know our process and will cater your stack design personally to you, to where you're not getting any more cookie cutter plans. And so we can run the most optimal approach, whether you're in a mass or a fat loss phase. So check us out, j3ucoaching.com. Anything else, leave questions, comments down below. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're on all our audio platforms, thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.